Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. It's Thursday afternoon, the 3rd of September. We're coming to you live on this day. The church remembers Gregory the Great. We do not assign that descriptor, that phrase, the great, to many in church history, but to Gregory we do. We'll find out why in the next 10 minutes of the program. You know, Alexander the Great, a man of stature in history, is known because of his amazing accomplishments, not all of them good. But in the church, we would call someone great for different reasons than military conquests or a great place in history. Why Gregory the Great? I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Dr. Thomas von Hagel is our guest. He's associate professor of theology at Concordia University, Chicago, and he's author of the book, One Lord, One Faith, One Baptism, Christians Through the Centuries. Dr. von Hagel, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be with you.
If there was an influence of Gregory's that has persisted until our time, what would you say it is?
Great individual, wrote rather extensively, a rather significant theologian. I guess at first might be tempted to think of the liturgical changes that maybe he influenced and, you know, still maybe affect our church today. A number of the Gregorian reforms probably occurred after him. Looking for something else, though, I think, and I'm not sure if many would agree with me, but his preaching. Not that it was something that was so unique or different than everyone else, but at the same time, he was a preacher who preached the Word of God, and consequently, he becomes part of that whole army of preachers throughout the history of Christianity, where the one generation learns from the former, and then the following learns from the one before that. And I don't even know today if Gregory's sermons are necessarily read or studied that extensively, but he is still part of that history of preaching, and so he has affected the people after him preaching to varying degrees, whether people know it or not.
Set him in history. Tell us Gregory's story.
Gregory, you know, upper middle class type of thing from the suburbs, you know, rather well-to-do family and such, and became an ascetic. And truly the life that he wanted to live, his being appointed to be Bishop of Rome, or, you know, the Pope, as we often call the Bishop of Rome, was something that not really desired by him. In fact, he wanted nothing to do with it, and often the case with many bishops in the history of Christian church, particularly those who are called out of asceticism, they really want nothing more than to pray, to serve God, and to serve neighbor in a very quiet and humble and simple fashion. And Gregory, being made the Bishop of Rome, was really upset initially that he, you know, had all of a sudden now to deal with external matters, just, you know, finances of the church and administration and all the problems that come with administration and the like. But as the Bishop of Rome, even though he didn't want the office, he wonderfully fulfilled his responsibilities there, and in terms of preaching, that was one of the areas that he wrote in his pastoral care, not only for himself but for others that would be bishops and priests in the church. To, I guess gave them lessons to learn about preaching and not to let, even though the office is important, not to let the office go to your head and to remain humble, and how to exhort different types of people. You know, the advice of living a devout and pious and holy life as a preacher, so that you set an example for your people. So a man who had no desire to be the Bishop of Rome, a man who performed wonderfully as the Bishop of Rome, and I guess tying into what I said earlier, gave a very good teaching to the other teachers and preachers in the church, and in terms of how they ought to do that in a God-pleasing fashion and for the benefit of the people under their care.
You mentioned a moment ago what bears his name, in fact, the various liturgical reforms, and you mentioned that many of these things were probably carried out in his name, but after his lifetime. What were these reforms? How significant were they?
Well, depending on which ones you're looking at, I guess, for example, you know, we do know that in the liturgy of his day, he moved the Lord's Supper, I'm sorry, the Lord's Prayer up right next to the actual kind of words of institution and the breaking of the bread, something that we as Lutherans are very familiar with, right? That's something that's very common, not only in our liturgy, but for many of the Western liturgies that follow as well. One of the probably more, again, I don't know if it's always recognized, but from my perspective, it is rather significant, are the collection of collects that these different sacramentaries have. And so the collection of collects for Gregory in his day, and then, you know, possibly following as well, that were simply put under his name. Those are the types of collects that collections of collects that are simply picked up in the next hymnal. Maybe not always all of them, but certainly some, or at least a few. And so, even to our day, this day, a church like the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod that tends to be rather traditional and historic in the liturgical practice, as you wander through the collects in the hymnal, there's going to be at least a good smattering of collects from the Gregorian changes in his day and his and after. I have to confess, though, I have not looked extensively at the new collection of collects of the day for the 3-year series, so I'm not conversant on the specifics there, but I know in our Lutheran hymnal and Lutheran worship, that certainly was the case.
With only a few minutes here, he stood at a pivotal time. The great break between East and West had not come yet officially between the Eastern Church and the Western Church, but there was already a crack, a chasm growing between the two, and he made every attempt to keep it from widening. With a couple minutes here towards the end, tell us a little bit about that peacemaking on the part of Gregory's.
Well, I mean, one of the things that's, you know, very significant is that for a short time, he was kind of an ecclesial ambassador of sorts from the West in the Eastern Orthodox Church. And so, you know, he simply interacted with the people and knew the people and so had actual connections to the leaders of the church in the East. And so there doesn't seem to be a lot of evidence that he was, you know, terribly fluent in Greek and read a lot of the Greek fathers, but he certainly was familiar with some. Gregory of Nazianzus, who was an Eastern father, and some others as well. So, you know, putting those two together, he certainly was a proponent of you know, trying to encourage the two being together at a time that the church had not officially split, but there were chinks already beginning to grow just between the differences in language, the differences in the liturgies, the the geographical and cultural differences that began adding up. But he certainly was one who tried to counter those, and like I say, did very actively, simply because he traveled there and was able to work with them, at least when he was there, and as Bishop of Rome later as well.
Dr. Thomas von Hagel is Associate Professor of Theology at Concordia University, Chicago. He's authored the book One Lord, One Faith, One Baptism, Christians Through the Centuries. Now, you can purchase One Lord, One Faith, One Baptism by calling Concordia Publishing House. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or you can browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand and look for One Lord, One Faith, One Baptism by our guest, Dr. Thomas von Hagel. Dr. von Hagel, thank you for being our guest.
Thank you for having me.
When we come back, the last half hour of the program is dedicated on this Thursday afternoon to your answers to this question. We've probably seen the news. There's some YouTube video going around as well, and have for a couple of weeks. A former Muslim girl from a Muslim family, converted to Christianity secretly at first. When her family found out about it, this is here in the United States, by the way. When her family found out about it, she alleges that her father threatened to kill her, according to Islamic law. Someone falls away from the faith or they shame the family. It's not unusual in Islamic countries for fathers or other relatives to carry out an honor killing. She says her father threatened this. She's estranged from her family right now, living in foster care. Today, a court hears her case and her parents' side of the story. Should the government return her to her parents? Her parents say never threatened anything. If she wants to be a Christian, she can practice those beliefs under her roof. They say they've been pretty lenient with her so far, and they never threatened to kill her. She says otherwise. Should she be returned to her Muslim parents, a Christian girl returned to her Muslim parents? Your answer to that question on the other side of the break, 1-877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org or Twitter us at issuesetc. If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
Evangelical and Catholic. You're listening to Issues Etc.
A statement worth repeating.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Congressman Mike Pence recently said this on taxpayer dollars and abortion. How the federal government spends taxpayer money says a great deal about who we are as a nation. Federal spending should reflect the cherished values of an overwhelming majority of American taxpayers. Even pro-choice advocates oppose taxpayer funding of abortion, and it is morally wrong to commit tax dollars of pro-life Americans to promoting or performing abortions at home or abroad. I will continue to fight for the right to life. Taxpayers and the just cause for the unborn deserve no less.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.